It'll start with the sound of Rook rustling through all his books. Hello! Welcome to Two Dimension Comics, a podcast with no direction. I am your host, Dallas Busha, and with me today is...
Don Moore.
Dr. Al.
Holy crap, we're all here again. It's Rook.
Yeah, baby. And this is probably either the very end of 2012 or the beginning of 2013, depending on when we decide to release this episode. But we hope everybody had a great holiday and a good Christmas and Hanukkah and whatever you celebrate.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, and a Happy New Year as well. It's great to have everybody together once again. I think last episode we talked a lot about movies and movie tie-ins to comic books and things like that. This episode, as promised, we're going to talk comic books. I got a small pile here. Rook's got a huge pile. Don's got the memory of an elephant. And Al's just Al.
The Empire Strikes Back.
What?
That was a good one. That was a good sequel. Yeah. We're going back to the other
one. like I said, Al's just Al.
Whoa. You lost all of us.
I was going to say that on the last one. I was going to say that.
Yeah, I know you were. That's what I was thinking. Empire Strikes Back. That was a good
one.
I didn't believe... I know a lot of people say that was the best one. To me, I just saw The Empire Strikes Back as a bridge between Star Wars and Return of the Jedi.
You stand up and walk out right now.
I liked it. I liked it.
Throw you out of my house.
See, but
wow.
Honestly,
I beg your pardon, sir.
I've only seen it as just a bridge between the two movies.
No, that's completely fine.
You know, and I've read in the newspaper when they re-released the new ones where Lucas added all the stuff, the guy wrote the paper and said, you know, I never thought about it, but Empire is just kind of a bridge between one movie and the other. I thought, okay, I was doing it, you know. I mean, I still liked it, but I didn't feel it was better than the Star Wars.
Well, back in our Christmas episode, we were trying to think of movie sequels that were better than the originals.
Star Trek 2.
Yes,
Wrath of Khan was great.
Where were you on the other episode, man?
He was listening
to you guys at each other over Batman. That was
he
great.
He was angry Al. Now he's Dr. Al this episode. Yeah, so he's got all his stuff
that
together.
That was kind of scary.
Now, I was... The Empire Strikes Back is a good point. Now, people that are my age and younger, I think all of us, it's kind of a unanimous agreement that Empire is a superior film. For people that are slightly older than me and people that actually saw the original Star Wars in the theater...
Oh, cool.
People that actually saw the original Star Wars in the theater would agree, would say that was the superior movie because that's the one they saw first.
Right.
It's really a matter of, obviously age, I think. If you're old, you like
so
the first
you're running
Star Wars.
With the Barney Stinson theory of girls after a certain year... with the Ewok, okay. Anybody who doesn't watch How I Met Your Mother is totally lost.
All I want to say is that analogy was legend. Wait for it,
dairy.
All right, and on that note, Al completely lost me my train of thought while I was trying to talk there because he grabbed the book and started gushing over it. What is that, dude? What are you reading?
It's Vampire Christmas, Michael Lenzer and Mike Dubich. And it looks really good.
It does. Look
Check
nice.
It out. But anyway, we were talking.
We had to mention Christmas, you know. Yeah. The Christmas episode, so I thought I'd show you a little something from my Christmas that I thought you guys might think was kind of cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, it looks European.
Yeah, it's something cool. I found it at the shop, and I was like, Vampire's Christmas, okay, well, what the hell is this?
When did it come out, do you know?
It looks recent.
It's like a bunch of chicks getting bitten.
It's a couple years old.
It looks like a early 80s, but yeah. I've never heard of these guys, either one of them.
It looks like the old, you know, heavy metal or metal hurlant style art.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought it was, but it's an Image book.
What?
Wow. Image is... Oh, come on, guys. Image is awesome, and we all know it these days. They're so good about supporting, you know...
Yeah, they are.
No, I didn't mean it that way.
A variety of titles and genres.
It looks like an older book, and when Rook said older, I was thinking late 70s, early 80s.
No, only a couple of years.
If it's Image, then it can't be that old. Okay. Yeah, it does look like an old book.
A lot of creator-owned stuff is...
No, Image is good.
Yeah, Image is great image. About publishing creator-owned books.
Yeah, that's really...
And to be completely honest, their origin is kind of creator-owned stuff. I mean, look at, you know, the guys that jump ship from Marvel. We don't have to get into it, but the guys that jump ship from Marvel, they had these creator-owned ideas and stuff they wanted to do on their own. And that's how Image started. It's completely... changed its face, the company, and it's so damn awesome these days. But it's still the same undertones, the same, it's, the same theory.
This book's reasonably priced too. It's only $5.95.
Yeah, it was.
That's a good deal for
a good price for a book. I mean, it was a fun little read.
Yeah.
You know, it's something I was going to say. My daughter picked up a book called Multiple Warheads, and you know, it's a regular standard comic book, but she said it's only $2.99, and it's staggering. Do you remember the cartoonist's name?
$1.99.
It was $1.99. No, it was $2.99. But I mean, the artwork was fantastic. But the thing that got me was there's no letters page. There's no advertisements. It's just from front to all the way to the back cover. It's nothing but the story and illustrations.
That means it's totally 100% creator owned and published.
Yeah, and like I said, it was
cheap. Gotta give them respect for that.
And I saw it. She got the second issue, and I thought, wow, I really like this. I wanted to buy it. As happens with her a lot, she'll want a comic, and then she brings it back, I don't want this, you can have it. So I didn't go buy it because of that, thinking, well, I may end up with it anyway, but you do like it. And you're giving this look like, what are you talking about? You always buy comics and bring it here, you can keep it, I don't want it.
So. It's like, oh yeah.
This conversation being had is great for radio. She's just giving you this look like, yeah, I'm playing my DS. Go away.
But a lot of the comic books you see, even with Image, they're standard prices. They're higher, and I was shocked that this one was so cheap. But the one you're showing me, it's very inexpensive as well.
So you mean it was retailing for $1.99? It wasn't on sale or anything?
Yeah, it's
That's so a great deal. That really, all comics should be like
that. What shop did you find this at?
I live in Tallahassee, so it was at Secret Headquarters.
Interesting.
Nice.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Good deal.
I wish I had a Secret Headquarters.
Card wanted to say Secret Headquarters and owner is.
Oh, I don't know. I don't remember.
Dr. Victor Von Doom.
The mastermind.
I think every year they have a unicorn party.
What is a unicorn party?
Not sure, but I know
it's a party with unicorns, dude.
I know a lot of bands show up and play. And
how awesome is that? A comic book shop that bands show up at and play. That, dude, that's the shop I want to go to.
College Town, dude. College Town. Yeah.
It's a strong shop.
Yeah, true.
It's a really strong shop. They got a big variety. Every time I go in there, they got every kind of comic you can imagine. And they have a room, just nothing but shelves of graphic novels. And I'm kind of surprised what I find in there. They moved to another location, and they have a gaming room. They got kids' comic section. They got all kinds of stuff. When it was in a smaller store, as soon as you walk in, the guy would walk, oh, hi, what are you looking for? And my wife and daughter was there. Oh, what do you like? And next thing you know, he's recommending books to them, too. I mean, he had complete control of the... Well, he's the mastermind. But it is a nice store, and like I said, they have a huge backstop of trades and graphic novels.
Nice.
Wasn't the Mastermind like a Marvel character for a while there, too? I seem to remember that.
Do you really want me to bust out with the Mastermind history?
Yes, please.
Oh, I thought, I thought he was going to bust out the Marvel trading cards.
I could bust those out, but yes, Mastermind was a Marvel character. He was part of the Hellfire Club.
Well, the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants.
Hellfire Club.
Well, initially, he was Brotherhood of Evil Mutants in the
right.
Stan Lee and Jack Kirby
more
days.
More popular, though, as a character when he was part of Hellfire Club.
Yeah, as Jason
Here
Wingard.
Here they go.
Yes.
There you go, Jason Wingard. He's the one that brought about the Dark Phoenix.
Uh-huh.
Keep going, Rook.
Keep going.
We know that. Al and I know this one.
You're an encyclopedia. Go for it.
All right, so if anybody wants a little bit of a movie reference to the idea of Mastermind, you can see him in X-Men. Was it X-Men 2, wasn't it? With Stryker?
Probably.
Yeah, Stryker was in X-Men 2.
Yeah,
his son was supposed to be the movie version of Mastermind.
I did not know that.
Did not know that, did you?
That's cool. Yeah. What are you going to punch me in the face now, aren't you?
He's schooling you again, Dallas.
I know. I don't know what to do.
And actually, there's a little bit of an homage in that piece to the original Age of Apocalypse series. With that character, because Mastermind in the Age of Apocalypse had the similar shaped scar in which, when he was part of in the pens, which Mr. Sinister ran, they removed part of his brain. Fun stuff, huh?
Nice.
Good
nice.
Stuff, man. Thank you very much.
That's like when we make the two-dimension trading cards, your special power is going to be the history of Marvel characters.
It's going to be the history of stuff nobody cares about.
All right, well, let's talk about some comics that we've read recently.
Don't look at me.
Everybody looks at Al. Well, let's talk about something that Rook just read about an hour ago.
Oh, yes.
It's a very, very popular and influential book from the 70s.
What we were talking about, Rook is a big fan, as I am, of the movie Wizards. When I saw that movie, it just kind of staggered me. I couldn't draw for about 3 weeks because I just kept going back to that movie. And I was at the one comic store in Oklahoma City. When I told the guy how much I liked it, he said, have you ever heard, he said Vagan Bode. Ended up, it was Von Bode, but he started pulling out different comic books that he had done. And one of them that has always remained my favorite is The Man by Von Bode, which I'm told he did when he was in college. Dallas is thumbing through it right now.
I love it because it's just self-contained, but every page is like almost a short little skit, like a comic strip would be in the Sunday Funnies, you know? But it just tells this great tale about a prehistoric man kind of learning. He's by himself, no other people. He's learning how to hunt, how to befriend pets, how to start a fire, what to eat, what not to eat. It's just this great series of events, and they're just so well done and paced so perfectly. And it's all just set on a series of 4 panels per page. So, you know, and it's
a very, very cool little story, and kind of a little sad at the end there.
Big time, yeah.
Well, that's what got me was, you know, it was just basically he's there and he has basically the spear he calls Stick. The end has been chiseled down into a spear, and it has one leaf on it. And I got this when I was in high school back in the 70s. And everybody would see it, they would grab it and read it, and everybody was always the same way. They were upset at the end. But it's funny because it's a man with a stick. He talks the stick like it's his companion. And at one point, he finds a lizard, and he was going to eat it, and then he makes it his pet. And then, you know, eventually he loses that, and he just says at the end, he's all alone. But I guess that's always got me. He was alone the whole time. He just kind of built his whole world up. But it's kind of like what we talked about last episode on The Walking Dead. They all build their own little world up inside the walls and don't know what's going on. Anyway.
That's a nice analogy.
That was deep. Deep Thoughts by Don Moore.
I just feel this comic book, I guess it's hard to find now.
It's such an under, it's such a simple work.
Exactly. I think that's part of the beauty of this book. And, you know, it's really something that I would kind of like to see somebody, I would love to see something like that republished.
Me too.
In a heartbeat.
Well, it should be a requirement. Everybody should have a copy. When you're born, they should give you a copy of The Beatles Revolver.
Yeah.
And they should give you a copy of that.
Yeah. And Led Zeppelin 2.
Along with the
What about Frampton Comes Alive?
Of course.
So they only issue that if you, they only give you a copy of that if you live in the suburbs.
Yeah, at least. Yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that's another one.
Do you like
that
album, Frampton Comes Alive?
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of got overplayed.
I have it in the collection here.
No, I don't have it.
You know,
I did too.
Not one that I listen to on a regular basis.
I mean, Peter Frampton's an underrated guitar player, but...
Yeah, he's really underrated. That's funny, because that album was just everywhere you went. I ended up buying it because I went to a record store in the 70s, and they had the double album for $5.
Wow. Yeah.
And it was a special from Butterfinger.
Butterfinger?
Yeah, I don't know why. It just had a big Butterfinger.
Like
Butterfinger
the candy
special.
Bar?
Yeah,
I went in to get something else. Well, $5, I can afford that. So I got it. But that's one of those albums that everybody on the whole planet has.
Wow.
Speaking of candy bars, you know that Three Musketeers you bought me today?
Yeah.
I left it on my desk at work.
Oh.
And we have a 4-day weekend.
Oh, man.
What happened? I went to buy a candy bar, and they had Three Musketeers. Oh, Dallas likes these, so I got one for my friend, handed it to him, and before he took it, I already had mine finished.
I was so excited. I was, like, jumping out of my chair. And I didn't eat it right then and there because we had a snack day today, and we had a ton of food, and I'm thinking, I'll save this thing. You know, I'll eat it later because I'm really looking forward to it. And then the end of the day came, and I was still stuffed. And I'm like, all right, I'll leave this until, you know, I come back. And then after we left, I realized we have a 4-day weekend. And
it'll still be good.
Yeah.
Those things last for decades.
They survived the zombie apocalypse that Rook's hoping for. I don't know why.
They're like Twinkies.
I just want to shoot people in the hoping for.
You stay away from me.
Yeah, I guess you do that now, but you know.
They frown upon that.
Yeah. Well.
So,
getting back to comics, right?
Yes, back to comics. Dallas, tell us more about your stack.
Well, I'm quite stacked. I got a few books here. I touched on a couple episodes back when I introduced an episode that Don and Al were on, and I mentioned that I was reading Pyongyang, A Journey in North Korea. It's an autobiography by Guy Delisle, which I guess he's a French-Canadian cartoonist. And it is his time that he spent maybe over a three-month span in the capital of North Korea, which, as you know, North Korea is a communist country, and it's completely shut off from the rest of the world intentionally. And at the time of this writing, Kim Jong-il was still alive, and he was in charge. So it was just a great little slice-of-life book, but his slice of his life during these 3 months was in communist North Korea. And it was very interesting to see him kind of just live with this stuff and his reaction, which he's kind of a hippie liberal kind of guy.
Yeah.
And so his reaction to living here, and he had a guide that was by him every single day, and this guide had to go wherever he went. If he went to a park or he went out to a restaurant, you know, they had to be there with him, and they were very, very, I want to say close-minded, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Well, he had more than a guide. He had a guide, a translator, and a driver.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
But,
here, take a look at it, Al.
Yeah, the guy, actually, I'm really impressed with him. He just, unless he's not like this in real life, he just kind of took everything in stride with a sense of humor. And I'll be honest with you, the last place I'd ever want to go on the planet is North Korea.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how it's such a dreary area and such a dreary, dismal experience, and you see him there. And the reason he's over there is, I guess, it they just outsource, and it's a lot cheaper for a company in North Korea to make these cartoons. And so he was a director or a manager for this small group of people working on a cartoon. So he had to be there to make sure they were getting the producing done. And so, like I said, it's a really dismal, dreary area. And like Don said, he's got such a good and outspoken and positive outlook. It's kind of fun to watch him, like, respond to this kind of stuff, and none of it really gets him down that much, like, just living there for 3 months.
Well, the place that they're at is kind of a little island in the middle of North Korea, and it's the hotels for the foreigners, and nobody really comes and goes. And that's one thing he's talking about was the first day he's there, he orders breakfast, and he sees there's French toast on it. So he orders... Yikes.
Got it.
So he orders a French toast. Ends up, it's a slice of bread soaked in milk and microwave.
Yeah, that's right.
And I just thought, well, I can't think of anything so unappetizing. And honestly, if I could only have one slice of bread soaked in milk for breakfast, whoever's going to be around me the rest of the day is going to have their arm gnawed off. But he just took it straight, just kind of made a joke about it, went on. I just can't imagine.
And the thing is, he's finding just the littlest things to amuse him and to kind of keep his mind off, you know, the fact that he's in the middle of North Korea and he can't do that much. So he's throwing paper airplanes out the window as a sign of rebellion and just enjoying it and seeing how far they'll go each time. And there's pages dedicated to just that, because that part of his life, he's focused on that. He's got nothing else. He's, every now and then there'll be another cartoonist that he knows from Canada or wherever that comes to work in North Korea in the same building he's in. And there's a great part where, one of his fellow cartoonists is there, and they're just kind of, they always mess with each other, kind of like Don and I do at work. Like, he'll run into the other guy's office and throw a rolled up wad of paper at the back of his head. And it's just little things like that that he focuses on, because he's got nothing else going on in his life except for that.
Well, I mean, what kind of cartoons does North Korea produce anyway? They're a pretty close society. And
no, they don't produce them. It's in France. The guy's French-Canadian. He's living in France.
I think it's just outsourced there.
But what they do, they're doing a cartoon in France. It's like The Simpsons.
Right.
The Simpsons are written and drawn and designed here in the United States. But in basically, they send it over to Japan and Korea to do all the animation itself. The storyboards are set up here. all the main parts are done, and all the in-between work is done overseas.
So North Korea does in-between work on cartoons?
Yeah, from France, not from the United States.
According to this book.
I tell you, I've heard stories about North Korea, and there's concentration camps, and I don't know what
yeah,
the deal
and
is.
He talks about
they insinuate those kind of things. They never fully show him that. Like, the North Koreans never show him those kind of things.
Yeah, right, of course not.
Well,
yeah.
here's the thing. One of the requirements when you get the job, there's a sheet you get, and it tells you what you can bring and what you cannot bring. You're allowed to bring one radio, like a transistor radio. And you can bring, you know, I mean, they state what, you know, razor blades, this and that, what you can bring and what you can't. And one thing you said, you can bring one paperback book. And it's for entertainment. And then also, when you're finished, you're supposed to leave it with your translator. Because, you know, they want English-speaking books. And that was just kind of like as an appreciation gift.
Well, the irony of it is the one book he brings is 1984.
Oh, God.
Which is brilliant.
Fantastic.
When they bring you in, you know, they check you out, and they say, what's this book? It's science fiction. Okay, and they checked it in, and that's it. Well, he's reading the book, and finally his translator asks him, what are you reading? Oh, it's 1984. It's science fiction. You want it? Oh, please, thank you. And he said the next day, the guy could not. It was the funniest part in the whole book. The guy gave it back to him. Here, you can take it. I don't like science fiction. And the guy says, are you sure? Yeah. Are you sure you don't want it? It's just, no, I don't.
Like, honestly, I would really suggest this book, even to people that usually don't read this style of comic book. It's really quick. It's a quick read, really easy to read, just really fun, matter of fact, and it's entertaining as hell.
Yeah, like, this really is not the style of book I read, but just from what you guys are talking about, this sounds very interesting. I'm going to have to borrow this from you.
I wouldn't recommend it. I like the guy's style isn't one, like Rook said, I would normally go for, but he tells a perfect story. It goes right along with what he was doing, and I really like how he lays out and composes everything. I like to see more. I really like this guy. And I like the book, although I still don't want to go to North Korea.
So
really does want to go.
Should
to
we
North
do
Korea.
The? We haven't done this in forever. I don't want to go to North Korea actually.
South Korea, our friend Mao was there.
Went there, and I really like South Korea.
Shout out to Mao.
Yeah.
So, do you want to do the old school rating on this book? Art and writing. What did we used to do?
We used to go to 10 for writing, the 10, you know, it's up to 10 for writing and art, but I'm not going to separate them because I can't see it done any other way, and, I mean, it's a recommended book. It's a strong book, and I don't know if I'd really rate it.
That's all I'm going to say as well, because I would literally recommend it to anyone that I know that enjoys a good, fun little story, and it's an autobiography. It's a quick read. So check it out. It's called Pyongyang, which is the capital of North Korea. It's by Guy Delisle. I'm assuming that's how you pronounce it. It's D-E-L-I-S-L-E. But it's really good. And it's published by... Let me look here. It's published by... I have no idea.
Well, we'll have a link to the blog. We'll have a picture of the cover, and we'll have a link to it.
By Drawn and Quarterly. Nice.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it's a really nice book.
All right, kids. Well, on that note, before someone else jumps into their books, I'd like to take a musical break. And once again... We're going to have some local metal/punk, right, Rook?
Yes, we are. Coming from you, from the CD that was given to me, this is a CD called Rumors and Reputations. Sorry.
Sorry to wake you
I kind of threw him under the bus there because he had no idea
yeah,
this was coming.
We have
to choose a song. Wow. Just close your eyes and point
right,
at one.
Here we go. We're going to go with The Wake from the band The Scurvy. Check this one out, guys.
Woo-hoo.
Well, once again, you wake up today, because tomorrow brings another day. I know you're living your life like there's no use being afraid, but you gotta put that one foot forward as long as it's not in the grave. And you better stop looking ahead, cause the other one crosses the waves. You're like the tidal wave, and we won't stand in your wake, no way. You're like the tidal wave, and we won't stand in your wake, no way. even if you get out alive, you will never forget the taste. With all the problems around you, you gotta be swimming in place. Well, we don't wanna support you, and we're tired of your dead weight. Cause you're like a tidal wave, and we won't stand in your way, no way. You're like a tidal wave, and we won't stand in your way, 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 way. You're like a tidal wave, and we won't stand in your way, no way. You're like a tidal wave, and we won't stand in your way, no way.
That was something or other with the Scurve? The Scurvy.
The Scurvy. That was a song called The Wake from The Scurvy.
Nice. Thank you. All right, guys. We just talked about one of my picks. So now, Rook, it's your turn.
Oh, God. Okay. So everybody knows Marvel has, it's probably been a little while by the time this has gotten published, but Marvel started Marvel Now and has hit the reset button once again on their universe. Not really the reset button, but this is a good new jump-off point. They didn't do like DC did and eliminate their entire mythos.
They're actually calling it the New 53.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay, so in front of me, gentlemen, you can see, I have a stack of comic books. Okay? These are all issue number one for some of the Marvel Now books.
Oh, that's about as thick as your skull, dude.
Yeah, that's a nice big stack. You want to see how many of these books I think are worth reading? Hold on. Wait a minute. Hold on.
Okay,
we're going to get a good sound effect here. Hopefully y'all heard that. That's the pile of crap books, okay?
Wow.
And in my hand, I have two books that I think are actually worth reading from this stack of garbage.
Wow. And they are?
Well, that would be the first one would be Thor. And how can you really go wrong with Thor? I mean, Thor's a great character. Always some good stuff. And it's a really interesting concept in this series that they're starting with. We actually are dealing with three timelines of Thor. Young, current, and old Thor. And he's fighting a god slayer, a being that kills gods. So, great story. Highly recommend the book. Art is fantastic.
Well, who's the creative team on it?
Jason Aaron. Azad,
he's a good writer.
Azad Ribic. Yeah, I guess that's how you read it. And,
he
Dan
did.
White.
Azad Ribic. Didn't he do some covers for Uncanny X-Force?
I think he probably did. Yeah. Yeah. So, now the other book that I highly recommend so far. Oh, sorry, I threw that on the ground. Is really kind of a departure from normalcy for me. Something that I was kind of surprised by how much I enjoyed this, but it was the Indestructible Hulk.
Shut the front door.
I've never been a Hulk fan. And, he turns big, he turns green, he smashes. Wow, what a concept. But what you're seeing in this very first issue was very different. Now, this is Mark Waid and, how do you say this?
Lin Yu. They've both been around for a long time.
Yeah, I'm horrible reading names sometimes.
Yeah, but honestly, Mark, if anybody listening reads comics and they know how awesome a writer Mark Waid is.
Yeah, great, great team. Let me tell you something. This book, you get to meet the Bruce Banner you always expected him to be. You know, he basically walks right up to the director of S.H.I.E.L.D., tells her, hey, I'm a freaking genius. You should be paying me more money, or paying me, period. And I'll make amazing things, and you guys just clean up after I destroy stuff. You know? And he goes, you know, you guys, when I get pissed off, point me in the right direction, and then clean up the mess, and I'll create amazing, amazing things, and we can all have a happy relationship.
So basically use him like a bullet.
Yep. Hulk has just been turned into the ultimate bullet. The way Bruce Banner is carrying himself in the conversation with Maria Hill is just fantastic. He's just very matter-of-fact, like, well, you know, if you're not interested, I'm sure somebody else in the world will be. So, yeah, great concept. Great first issue.
I'm not going to lie. I'm a sucker for Lanil Yu's art, and it's great. It's top form in this book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, both of these books I found to be fantastic.
And so is Marvel, are these new origins for every character?
No, we're not going on, they're not going on new origins here. What they're basically doing is they're stepping up and restarting each series from one. And, you know, you do need to know, especially with, like, the Avengers stuff, you do need to know some of the things that have been going on as of recent. I picked up Cable and X-Force number one. You definitely need to know some of the things that have happened in recent X-Men history there. With the Avengers stuff, you need to know what's been going on with the X-Men and the Avengers. So, you know. So, no, this is not a complete new, you know, reset to the system like DC did. It's just a new series of number ones, a new series of titles. You know, Uncanny X-Men, or Uncanny Avengers, pardon me. Deadpool's got his own book again. Iron Man, Indestructible Hulk, Cable and X-Force. There's going to be an Uncanny X-Force. Avengers Arena, which I... let me tell you also one thing, okay? This one right here, Captain America. I love Captain America, okay? I highly recommend you don't get this book.
Wow.
Yeah. John Romita, this is a love letter to you. Draw different characters differently. Seriously, I open this book and Captain America. I'm so aggravated by this. Captain America, when he gets his mask off, is Kick-Ass grown up. That's how bad he drew this book.
Well, it's seriously, you said it's John Romita Jr.
Yeah, John Romita Jr. You need to draw.
I don't think John Romita's drawing anything.
I mean,
well, didn't he pass away?
No.
Oh, he didn't. Sorry. No. I thought he did.
Here we go, guys. Okay.
That upsets me just thinking about that.
I'm sorry. Right. I hope he didn't.
All remember what Kick-Ass looked like in the book. Okay.
Mental note.
And
boom.
And wait, let me find a good picture of him. Because, whatever.
This makes great radio, too.
Yes, this makes great radio. Turn the pages. There you go.
Without his mask on.
That's... Who is that? That is Kick-Ass grown up.
That's old Johnny's style, though. He's always drawn to more or less like that.
More or less like that, but he's seriously over the top. And the previews I've seen of the next book are even worse. It's a grown-up Kick-Ass walking around with Hit Girl. But it's supposed to be Captain America and some girl.
Yeah.
I mean, really. Yeah, here you go. Here's the cover of the next issue right there.
We'll be showing this on
the... Yeah, we'll have pictures of this online for you guys.
If we can find them.
Seriously, you look at this picture, and it is Kick-Ass in a Captain America costume, grown up, standing next to Hit Girl.
Well, I mean, we were talking about stuff like that. Like, some artists are very good artists, but they tend to, you know, if they're not, they tend to have a stock...
Yeah, they have like a...
They have stock, style, faces. The poses.
Yeah, like but the I semi mean, did, you know, and stuff like that.
This isn't a stock look. This is, I'm not even going to goddamn try.
Oh, man.
I guess my question is on these, you know, you said they still keep their own continuity. It's just the creative teams have changed to add some. What's different about what went on before to now?
As far as I can see, well, you know, with the whole A versus X thing, a lot of stuff happened, a lot of things fell apart. This is Marvel trying to regroup everybody back together into a happy community in a way. The Avengers are reforming with Captain America and Iron Man. The X-Men are starting to reform. After the death of Xavier at the hands of Cyclops, everybody is trying to just kind of get back into a proper headspace of what the hell happened? Okay, we need to recover now. And this is Marvel's attempt to redo that by just saying, okay, that was that. We're gonna bring it all back together again, and we're starting from one.
When did Professor X come back? I thought he was dead before.
I can't keep that straight either.
Yeah, he came back, he was able to walk again. Yeah,
what?
And then Cyclops killed him.
What a jerk.
Yeah.
You know?
Put that one in your pipe and smoke it. Think about it for a minute. You've been away from the X-Men for a while, you just come back, and you find out that Cyclops killed Professor Xavier.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, and by the way, Magneto's a good guy again.
Do you have,
And I think Jean Grey's dead. Again.
Still? Right?
Again.
Oh, she came back?
I think so. I don't know.
She died at the end of...
She comes back like every 5 years.
She died at the end of Grant Morrison's run, and I'm pretty sure... I don't think they've brought her back since then. At least I hope not.
I really don't know. I mean, I can't keep track anymore.
Yeah, how many X-Men books are there? Like 10 or something? I know there's at least 4 or 5. Easily.
With this new jump off...
Didn't they just restart X-Men like 2 years ago?
Yeah,
not even like a year ago?
Yeah, they did.
They did.
Remember, you were looking for the
issue. I was looking for the last issue of Uncanny.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they did. They just restarted X-Men a little while ago, and now they're doing it again.
Oh,
so,
that's great.
You know,
brilliant.
There's going to be so many goddamn copies of X-Men number one that somebody's going to say, oh, I have a copy of X-Men number one for sale. Really? From what year?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, from what month?
Wait. Yeah, in 2012, it's going to be what month?
Yeah, really. Good old Marvel.
2013 is going to be worse. It's going to be X-Men number one. Which week?
Yeah. There you go.
Al, have you read anything lately? Or?
Not this week. No.
No.
No. I read some stuff last week, but I haven't even got my this week's comics. So
okay.
I have not. So
I gotcha.
Sorry, I've been behind in my reading.
Well, Don.
Well, it's funny. I guess since Rook was talking about the X-Men, if you listen to the show, I'm a big Alan Davis fan. And, there's been spotty times. I've been looking up online and finding out he drew X-Men for a while, which I had one or two issues and a couple of annuals he did. So I've been going back and getting old issues. And I have to say, these are quite good. It's, the Uncanny X-Men. Chris Claremont wrote these. But I guess there's about 10 issues. I can't stress how much I've enjoyed these. It's like I was just talking, with Rook and Dallas just a second ago. I have no idea what's going on. I guess Cannonball's a main character into it. There's a lot of characters I've never seen before. One called Sage, which they said she came from the Hellfire Club. And I guess they got two different groups. Storm and Nightcrawler and Wolverine have a... badges. There's some type of agents for something. And the thing that gets me, one of my favorite comic runs is when Alan Moore and Alan Davis did Captain Britain, and they had the Jasper's Warp. And that Jasper's creature they called the Fury, which to me is the most horrifying thing that ever appeared in comic books.
It's visually, yeah, it's a scary looking dude.
Yeah, and it just how Alan Moore wrote it about he can feel, he was describing how this character, how this creature could, see and adapt everything that had gone on, and they talk about Sinu moves, digital things come in. He was describing everything, how,
Alan Davis drew that one,
yeah.
Man. Did you have this one here, X-Men?
No, these are mine.
Oh, I thought they were books.
But,
Al is just Al.
But it was horrifying, and it's back in these X-Men things, and they're trying to deal with it. And Chris Claremont does a really good Alan Moore as far as how he's describing how this creature is working and, you know, all the things going on.
And I think that's one of Claremont's strengths has always been. He's so verbose, and he's good at explaining things. And so it lends itself to that kind of explanation.
You know, as always, a couple of weeks ago, Al and I were talking about, I found some Alan Davis Fantastic Four issues he did. I forgot who wrote them, if somebody else. And, I mean, the artwork was nice, and I read the stories, and they were fine, but so-so. And reading these, the story is really strong. It just keeps going. And, again, even though I have no idea of where the X-Men are and what they've done, it still does. I'm not lost.
It's still fun, yeah.
Yeah, I can still pick it up, and I get enough information that I can just move on with it.
Well, let's give props, too, to the anchor, Mark Farmer, because I think we were talking about it. I saw a new Fantastic Four book drawn by Mark Bagley, and it was a number one, I think. I don't know if Rook might have it there or not. And it was Mark Bagley drew it, and the inking by Farmer was really, really nice. I usually don't like Bagley's work, but this is the first time I really enjoyed it. So, I mean, as good as Alan Davis is, I think his inker needs to get some, you know, props, because it was very...
And they've been working together for years, decades.
Yeah, British, even. Well, I don't know if they were working with Warrior, but, I mean, at least 10, 20 years.
At least since the Excalibur books.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, so...
Yeah, there it is, right there, Excalibur number one. Chris Claremont, Alan Davis, Mark Farmer, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Found it in a 50-cent box.
Nice.
Yeah, I did, too, and I bought it again.
How many copies?
Coyote?
I've got a few of that one. That was good.
And that was just recent. I found that. Just recently, I found that in a 50-cent box.
Yeah, well, I bought that at Yancey.
Could not leave it there.
Have you ever read it?
Yeah, I read it years ago. Okay.
Well, did you have the other one to trade? That first?
Yeah, the first trade.
The sword is drawn. It's called.
I don't know if I have.
Well, you're going to, because I've got six copies of it. I keep finding it. $400.
That's not an exaggeration.
Yancey. I got that one, and I also got the. Before that one came out, they had a special one, and it basically set the whole thing up. And it's, you know, a little square-bound, kind of like Dark Knight was.
Right.
And to me, it's just one of the strongest books. You know, it's Claremont, Davis, and Farmer. And I thought, wow. And all of a sudden, at the Yancey Convention, the Yancey Street, Wilson's, I keep finding this book, and it's got to go somewhere. Why not with me? So you'll be getting a copy soon.
Sounds good. You guys will love this. I did the most evil thing to my kid recently. Okay.
Oh, we're gonna love it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like your son a lot, so it may make me mad.
It's comic book related. It's great. So my kid is a huge fan of the Predator and Aliens and everything, you know. And he's got a bunch of the figures and things of that nature, but he really doesn't have much for comic book wise for them. Well, local bookstore here has comic book boxes. So I start shuffling through them. I'm not finding anything of any worth. You know, it's like a bunch of old Wildstorm books and garbage. Well, I start finding different books from Aliens and Predator. And so I start pulling them to the side. Well, I end up with a stack of probably like, I don't know, less than a dozen, I want to say, of books. Now, there's 4 or 5 different series there. And there's only bits and pieces of each storyline. And they're all limited edition runs, things like that. So I bought them, and I brought them home to him. And I told him, I was like, look, you know, you're interested in this universe of stories. Would you like these? And he goes, yeah. So now I've told him that he can't read any of them until he finishes the series. He's got to get all the pieces.
That is evil.
So I made him write down what each series was and what books he's missing.
None like passing it on to the next generation, looking for back issues.
Oh, man, he's going to be looking for back issues for the rest of his life on some of these.
MyComicShop.com, baby.
You know, I'm starting to understand why kids aren't reading comics anymore. thanks a lot, Rook.
Oh, come on, man.
Another one bites the dust.
There is nothing like the hunt for that issue, though, if you think about it. Now, I'm joking when
you
I say
find
he's
it.
Not going, that I'm not going to allow him to read the book. Of course, he can read the books whenever he wants. But I've put that desire into him now to find those missing issues. And we all know there's nothing like the hunt for that missing issue. that missing part of your storyline.
Absolutely.
It is fun. I mean, we all do that. We all have lists. That's why, you know, we go to some of these comic stores and dig around. But I guess the thing that gets me is I've got so many holes in the collection that I just can't find. And it's, that's what Dallas just mentioned, mycomicshop.com, an online site we use. And, man, that one, it's constantly, they're always adding things, even obscure books that they're only asking for, say, 80 cents for.
Now, and it's a great site. However, it's not like the hunting for the search for the books, like you just said. So it's great to fill in the holes. It's great to be able to complete your collection, but you don't get that sense of satisfaction when you get them.
I look at it, if you've been looking for this book for 10, 15, 20 years, it's not cheating anymore. It's to keep your sanity.
All right. I'll give it to you. If you've been looking for that book for 2 decades, yes, cheat, go online, find it.
But 1 decade, forget it. Keep looking, buddy.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's great. Well, I mean, we got a few other books. I can keep talking.
I got a few other books too here, guys.
Oh, okay. Well.
Well, let's hear another one.
You want to? You know what? I've always been a big He-Man fan, and you know they kind of killed off He-Man a while ago, and they stopped publishing the books. But a few months back, He-Man and Masters of the Universe reappeared on the shelves at Yancey Street. So I figured, okay, this is just a reprinting of stuff they've already said 100 times. I picked it up anyway because I don't know. I like to spend money on things I already have, or at least I thought I already had.
I can't even relate to that.
6 copies of Excalibur.
Come to find out, it's actually a whole brand new storyline and a whole new concept for He-Man. Skeletor 1, he got Grayskull. He banished Adam into a forest and erased his memory. Actually, he banished all the masters all over Eternia and made them wiped all their memories out.
What? Even Man at Arms?
Even Man at Arms. And for whatever reason, Adam just has this lingering, wanting feeling, and he decides that he is going to find out what's beyond his forest. And, of course, in comes, you know, the eagle, which is, of course, we all know as He-Man fans, is actually the sorceress, and guides him out of the forest, and he ends up in a fight with Beastman, and now he's found Teela, and, it's just really interesting as Adam is rebuilding himself and finding out who he is, but he's not transforming into He-Man. It's Adam fighting, and it's Adam regaining his memory. But Adam is actually showing for once that he is capable of doing the things that they want, that He-Man did. And yes, you gave a little point there. Yeah, it's DC Comic Books publishing it this time.
Wow.
Okay, one. Go ahead, Adam.
No, it was Marvel years ago. I seem to remember that.
Well, I have a question.
Epic,
you said that they've killed off He-Man, and now they brought this back. So when did they kill off He-Man?
By kill off He-Man, what I meant is they canceled his books.
Oh.
That's what I didn't mean they actually, like, in the books, killed him. No, they canceled out his publishing.
Now, is this a TV show that's coming back or something? Is this a tie-in?
No, I don't think you're going to see another He-Man TV show. Okay. And honestly, I'm as a He-Man fan, I think that they need to stay away from the TV show. Let's just keep them in the comic books.
So that's the fourth. I remember last time I saw you had the first issue of it. You were kind of excited about it. That's the fourth, is he?
Yeah, that's the fourth one now. And I think that's the newest. Yes, that's the newest one right there. Huh. So yeah, and it's really a good book, and it's a very different direction for He-Man. So it's Keith Geffen and Pop Mon working on it.
Was Keith Geffen writing it?
Yeah, it looks.
Oh.
Good. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So yeah, like I said, good book, $2.99. You know, not an expensive one. And not something that I've seen a lot of people reading yet.
Right. So. Well, a friend of ours at work, he's a huge He-Man. He collects all this stuff. He's in the Collector's Club.
Right.
I see pictures of his house, and I never watched the show. I mean, He-Man to me is kind of an alien thing I see from afar. But I do enjoy seeing his collection. And I mentioned that He-Man comic. Because, you know, DC's got one. See, I know about it. Since he's going to get them in trades. You know, he was all excited about it. But, again, to me, it's just something I've seen from afar. It's something you kids like.
It's a generation thing.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Oh, God. Yeah, I'm surprised that DC just started doing that again. I guess they must have just gotten the rights or something.
They must have gotten the rights from somebody, and, yeah, like I said, they're doing a damn fine job of it so far. So, you know, and what's interesting is they are doing something a little different. It's not just, I'm Adam, I turn into He-Man, and I kick everybody's ass.
Right.
It's, you know, something is wrong with Eternia, you know, and Adam is trying to figure it out. So, it's very interesting. And it's also another little interesting thing is to see the evolution of some of the characters, especially, well, the villains especially, since they took over. They all look a little different. Mm. They all have a little bit of a different design to them in this series. And, you know, Adam is basically working his way through the various Skeletor villains, outsmarting them on his way to, presumably, I assume he's on his way to Grayskull.
Cool.
Nice. I like it. It's a completely different take, like you said. I think that's a really cool thing to do.
Yep. And you guys know me. I love the Elseworlds-style storylines. Yeah, you know, take the well-known character and put them in a completely unknown situation.
I guess
prime example right here.
The first thing I'd ask, do you think kids would like this, or do you think it's guys that liked it as a kid, and now you're older and you want more?
No, I think this is definitely for someone who grew up with He-Man or knows He-Man. This is not... a kid can read this, yes. It has no issues there. But, you know, right from the jump point, you have to know a little bit of He-Man history to know that, well, this just... What? Wait a minute. What's going on?
Well, I guess what I meant was, would a kid want to read it? Would they be interested in reading something and enjoy it? Because some books, when I was a kid, I had no interest in looking at. Al and I talk about this all the time. And as I get older, you know, all of a sudden, oh, okay, I see where they like this. You know?
I don't know if this has very much kid appeal to it. I don't know that young kids would be interested in something like this right now. You know, most of the kiddie comics that I see are, you know, baby Avengers or, you know, little X-Men, you know, like junior.
Do they really have books called Little Avengers and Baby X-Men?
I think they do. I don't know. I'm just throwing examples out. It's like younger versions of the popular characters. He-Man is
Tiny
really
Titans
not,
or whatever it's called.
Yeah, Tiny Titans.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Well, those can all be fine. And I've heard, I've never seen it, but I've heard of some kids like the Johnny DC stuff and all that.
Yeah.
But to me, I look at those books, they're written specifically for kids, and sometimes it's what we talked about in another earlier episode about dumbing down, like in movies and stuff. And, but you know, when I was a kid, you know, you didn't have adult comics, and you know, comics are considered for kids, but everybody read them. And, you know, we were reading the regular Spider-Man, and, you know, all the way up to when Stacy died. I mean, there was horrifying things happening. But we wanted to know this.
Yeah. Well, and see, I think that's one of the interesting things that I'm coming into right now with my son is, you know, he's been a comic book reader since he was 3-4 years old.
Right.
I mean, he learned how to read with comic books. He's now 13, and it's kind of now becoming... As he is standing behind you flexing, I'm sorry, it's a hard thing to concentrate on. You know, it's an interesting thing now that he's 13, so he still picks up, you know, kind of some of the more kid-style comic books, like Sonic the Hedgehog and stuff.
Right.
You know, that's always been his wheelhouse. But now he's starting to look at other books, and you know, I'm hesitant in a little bit of a ways, you know, being a very proactive parent, and I look at some of the books he's picking up and just kind of looking at the cover or things that, you know, he's interested in because he's heard us talk about them or knows that I collect them. He's starting to become interested in some of that stuff, and, you know, there are definitely some books in my collection he cannot touch. You know, the boys want basically anything Garth Ennis has ever written. Yeah. You know, but here is that point. I mean, what age do you let a kid loose in the comic book shop to be able to buy whatever they want?
30.
I mean, when I was like, what was that, like 12 or whatever, I remember going into a drugstore and buying Vampirella number one. And that was a pretty racy looking comic. And I go back out to the car, I tell my dad, can you give me another 50 cents or whatever? He goes, sure. So I go in, I buy the book, bring it into the car. My dad goes, what'd you buy? I go, this. And he's like, okay.
Right. He's like, can I read that after you?
But, you know, what's funny is I seem to remember being probably around like 14 or 15, and I was reading The Crow,
which was an adult's only
comic book. I picked up one issue at a shop that I didn't normally go to, and the guy refused to sell it to me.
He told me,
he goes, I can't sell that to you. So I went out to the car and I got my mother. And my mother came in, she kind of came in with a, what do you mean you can't buy a comic book? Come on.
Yeah.
You know, kind of attitude. And the guy's like, look, it's for adults. And she goes, yeah, he has all the other issues already. So the guy went, okay, fine. So, but, you know, it's an interesting thing is that I'm kind of dealing with now with him. It's like, okay, how loose do I let him run in the store? You know?
Right.
Well, that's good parenting.
No, it is. Mm-hmm. But, well, it's a different issue now because it was very rare to see comics when Al and I were growing up that you couldn't read until you started going to comic shops and seeing Zap comics and this kind of stuff. But, I mean, most of it was just standard. It was okay. Even the Marvel black and white books that, you know, weren't comics code, they weren't that far past it.
Right.
But, you know, now, just mainstream comics, some of the most horrifying things seem to happen to them.
Well, and get ready for the buzzer. Back in the 70s, the creepy and eerie books.
Ding, ding.
They were pushing it. They were pushing it.
Yeah,
that's probably why I was getting them.
What's funny is if you look at that stuff now, some of that still is
it's
on
still,
the edge.
Yes,
you know,
yes, it
really is.
Yes, it
for
is.
Today's society.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the 70s was a time when I think people were pushing and seeing what they could get away with. And in the mainstream, now there's still that going on, you know, but back then it was a little more, I don't know, maybe newer, more horrifying in ways. I don't know. But like you said, Garth Ennis.
Well, plus young children are exposed to a wider variety of things in movies, television, comic books.
Well, heck, you can watch
then.
The Walking Dead on TV, on regular cable TV.
Now, granted, it's on at 10 o'clock at night, and there's...
No, it's on at 8. On Sundays at 8.
I think it's
9.
It's 9. Okay. Oh, 9, that's
it's
it.
It's 9 o'clock.
I was wrong on both counts. But granted, it's not on at 5 or 6 in the evening. You know, that's not a fluke. There is a reason that it's on a little later.
But still, it's on basic cable. You don't even need a box to get it. Well, you need a cable coming out of your wall or whatever, but they're pushing it. You know, that stuff wouldn't get shown back then.
Even 10 years ago, that would not have been shown.
Well, our friend Mark Agnola does all the special effects for movies and stuff. We were talking about it when it first came on. He said he was smiling because I can't believe they're showing that on TV. He was thrilled, you know. But
a lot of us can't believe that they show some of the stuff they do. And the article I read with Kirkman that I refer back to quite often, Kirkman basically told AMC, well, this is what I want to get away with. I'm like, okay. Yeah, we can let you get away with that. Okay, he goes, well, all right, if I can get away with that, where is the line exactly? They went, just don't use the F word. That was their line. Don't use the F word. Other than that, have fun. And he pretty much has. He's really gone off the wall with some of his stuff.
Well, even the other ones like Breaking Bad and Mad Men or whatever, those are pushing it. Those are pushing what, you know, pay TV, whatever you want to call it, commercial TV. There was this one show about fantasy football. I forget what it's called, but it's on like... Yeah, that's it. They're saying words that I didn't think they would be on.
Wait a minute. There's a show about people playing fantasy.
Believe it or not.
Yeah, it's called The League.
Yeah,
and you guys watch it?
Yeah, you know Al watches
it. I've seen a couple episodes.
Al's on it.
But no, it's about Al.
Yeah, it's about me.
Is it good?
The League.
It's like one of these, like, you know, kind of comedies that's all, you know, they're trying to be a little outrageous. It's okay. It's not great, but it's all right. It's on FX, I think, on whatever. I don't even know what day it is. I saw, like, a few of them a couple of years ago. There was, like, you know, drug jokes and, you know, a couple of S-bombs hit in there. And
yeah,
you know.
Next season you start showing those guys how you folded up the triangle football out of a notebook paper.
Yeah.
And flip it onto
the desk. No, dude, you can buy those out of, like, the coin machines now. They have them pre-folded for you with your favorite team on the front.
Oh, that is really pathetic. Are you kidding me? Don't even let the kids fold their own.
Are you sure that the apocalypse didn't happen?
And we just didn't. We were informed.
Yeah, we were informed. On that note, guys, I think we're going to call it a night. So I just want to thank everyone that listened to the episode and encourage you to join us next time. In the meanwhile, you can find us. There's a variety of ways to find us, but we do have a website. And Don's going to tell you what the URL is.
The URL doesn't always seem to work. You type it in, it takes you to the Bunch of Dorks page. But if you go to Google and type in 2TWO Dimension Podcast, it'll take you there. We have an old site, the Blogspot site. You can go to that, and there's a link to the new WordPress page. I hope to God someday this is going to be fixed.
You can bypass all that by just checking us out on iTunes.
But you can't see examples of the stuff we talk about on iTunes. You have to go to the blog to see that.
That's absolutely true. But if you do go to iTunes, please leave a review, please, because everything kind of goes positive towards us getting noticed, and we'd love that. Also, we have a Facebook page. Check us out on Facebook. And you can find Al's alter ego, Dr. Morbius, on
Slow Robot Agogo, where I think this week we will be reviewing The Omega Man with Charlton Heston.
Nice.
Great film. Great film.
One thing.
Far better than I Am Legend with Will Smith.
But did you ever see The Last Man on Earth with Vincent Price? That was the original version of it.
That's right.
A great
I didn't
one.
Know that.
A movie that basically... Night of Living Dead is very, borrowed from it. Let's put it that way.
I can't recommend Slow Robot Agogo enough. I listen to it because, you know, Al and Mal are my friends.
But I thought you said you couldn't recommend Slow Robot Agogo. I was like, oh, man.
I'll be honest.
I would recommend
that
show.
I really enjoyed the show, and I can't wait to hear another episode. And half the time when they talk about a movie, they mention the title. And I don't know some of these older movies.
Well, that's the great thing is...
As soon as it comes, they start describing it. I remember I saw it at the drive-in in the back seat when I was a little kid. So, you know, or the Dialing for Dollars in the afternoon.
Dialing for Dollars?
But yeah, it always just slowly...
Dollars? What?
You never heard of these?
You never heard of Dialing for Dollars?
Yes, I have, but not in many, many years.
Well, check out the show. It's great. Mao is awesome, especially when he's drunk. So I think you'll enjoy the. show. Also, you can find my webcomic, The Mighty Blue, at mightybluecomic.blogspot.com. Check it out. It's in the 40s or 50s at this point. Who knows? It's crazy. Thank you, everyone, for listening to us, and have a safe and happy new year. And
don't forget, everybody, check out our friends, Yancey Street Comics. That's Yancey Street. Street is ST.net. And check out our newest set of friends over at Game Traders. That's gametraders.biz.
That's right. All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening. And until next time, read more comics. We are perfectly in sync with that one, weren't we?